The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now it's time for our Friday Forum, and we are joined by Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Bay South, by Lorcan Nyan, Head of Training with the Communications Clinic, columnist with the Independent.ie, and Senator Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin Senator. Good morning and welcome, one and all. So we'll go to you, Jim, first of all, just to get the Fianna Fáil Ardhéis out of the way. Have you a starring role?
Well, I'm there at 6 o'clock this evening, past welcoming guests, and as you'll know, it's
are
not
you
that
the first up?
Well, I'm the reception committee myself. Okay. Catherine Arda and Barry Andrews are there to meet the people. So obviously, people arriving first are going to be met with that great pleasure and privilege for them. And then later on this evening, we're having a debate on justice as well. But it's a fairly detailed, full Ardesh. Obviously, it's an opportunity for local election candidates and our European candidates to set out their stalls. We've got elections coming up in about 8 weeks. It'll be the last Ardesh before what will be the first national election, I suppose, we've had since 4 years ago. So it's important. Ardesh is taking place in the city centre, not far from here. So hopefully we've got a good crowd coming up. And there was an Ardesh late last year in the same location with a great crowd, and I'm hoping for the same again.
All right. And now we'll park that and we'll talk about the first week or so of the new Taoiseach. Lynn, what is your take on Simon Harris as Taoiseach?
Well, Simon, who went missing in action on the day one. So I think, look, you know, I'm out in the doors all the time and people are saying that this is no change. This is the third Taoiseach we've had in between 14 and 16 months. What they want is a general election. I think a News Talk poll backed that up as well, that 60% of people would like to see a general election. So not a change of the deck chairs on the Titanic. But look, we're not expecting Simon Harris to do anything differently. He's trying to make people believe that he can change now in 11 months what, you know, he hasn't been able to do either 13 years as a TD and 8 years of those years in cabinet. So look, there, you know, as I said, we want a change of government. Simon Harris is no change whatsoever. It's more of the same.
But, you know, the clock is ticking anyway.
Well, the clock is ticking, but the people would prefer that the alarm be rang now and they get to have their say.
Lorcan, what about the initial take on Simon Harris? Because it's so early and yet he's been busy. He missed leaders' questions and the opposition made much of that. He had a few phone calls to make with world leaders and preparing for a whistle-stop tour around Europe, it would appear. What do you make of how he's handled it so far?
I think the first week can really define it down to who has he been talking to, you know, the big rule of communications, know thy audience, who is everything tailored towards. And I think the first week has very much been tailored towards the current 20% of people who were polling to vote for Fine Gael and maybe the 3 or 4 or 5% who were recently but no longer are. So whether it be the talking points, you know, in his first speech or the Ardesh, whether it be the reshuffle itself, which was tailored much more towards the Fine Gael parliamentary party maybe than a wider public. And I think that's his strategy thus far. Make sure you solidify the current base and maybe increase it ever so slightly. And there was a very interesting poll, I thought, in an Ireland Thinks poll in the Journal yesterday, where the headline of it coming out of it was that 15% of all voters are less likely to vote for Fine Gael now that Simon Harris is Taoiseach. But when you delve into it, if you look at the current Fine Gael voters, not members now, but voters, that 20%, their 20% of those are more likely now to continue to vote for Fine Gael than they were beforehand, and there's been no real drop off. So that strategy initially seems to be working, and their local elections, as Jim said, are in 8 weeks, and I think that's probably been under talked about. That's really where everything is probably tailored towards now, which is, right, can we get back up? Can they get back up? Can Simon Harris get them back up to that 24-25%?
What about his international adventures, Jim? You know, sometimes people just want to be seen with movers and shakers in the world. I mean, there was a queue of people to see Vladimir Zelensky shortly after the war started. And still people want to be seen with him because it seems to give them credentials of being movers and shakers on the world stage. Is that what Simon is at?
I don't think so. And in fairness to him, he's only in the job 4 days. I think I should say at the outset, it's a pretty remarkable achievement for someone at 37 years of age to be elected and appointed as a Taoiseach. And it was a great day for him and his family. Obviously, foreign affairs is something that's going to occupy a huge amount of his time. He probably he's new to it because I don't think he had a ministry before that involved much foreign affairs engagement. I think it's appropriate that he meets all the international figures that are relevant to the issues of the day. Like the Taoiseach Knesset announced in the Dáil during the week that we were going to recognise the state of Palestine. That's a significant foreign affairs development for Ireland, and we don't want to just do it on our own. We need to liaise with other EU countries. Spain look like they're going to do it. Hopefully we'll get a few more in. And that's why I welcome what Simon Harris
has been doing. Is that something really significant domestically, you know, to silence some of the voices on the left who have been critical of the government and not doing enough to criticise Israel?
So I think it's important politically and globally. Like, when you look back to the UN resolution that set up the state of Israel, it also set up an Arab state as well. And
it's in 1947. We talked about it earlier and with the Israeli ambassador.
That state needs to be recognised and we need to play our leading role in that. Like, there are different views throughout the EU in respect of the issue of Palestine. We're one of the most pro-Palestinian countries and pro-Palestinian governments. But I think making that move to recognise the state of Palestine would be something novel, and it would be a real change from the point of view of the EU countries.
OK, I'll come back to you as a lawyer in a moment to tease that out. But Lynn?
Yeah, no, but I mean, what's more damning is the fact that Simon Harris at the Ardèche criticised what's happening, what the Israeli government are doing to the Palestinian, innocent Palestinian people, but at the same time rejected the motion to basically implement the Occupied Territories Bill, which would be a really strong message of solidarity to the Palestinian people, but also in terms of law. Do you know what I mean? This has passed through both the Dáil and the Seanad, and it's been held up by government. The legal advice is it does not contravene EU law. So that's something that we would really like to see the new Taoiseach to follow up on. If he really wants to, I suppose, send out that message of solidarity to the Palestinians and enforce the Occupied Territories Bill.
Lorcan?
Yeah, I think if you look at it over, as you said, the clock is ticking, the 11 months, I think what the new government is going to be trying to do is get kind of tangible wins that people can associate with them. That's domestically. I think you look at that internationally then as well. And I think the fact that Pedro Sanchez is in Dublin, the Spanish PM, and that those talks have started to happen, it's obviously continuing work that was already happening. But I do think that the government are going to want to be seen to be really leading on this issue, an issue where I think Irish people are broadly aligned in quite a big way on where you want it to go. So they want to lead on it.
There is an issue here when you're recognising the state of Palestine. What is it? Because the Palestinian Authority is running one part of it, is always being characterised as a corrupt authority. Then we have Gaza run by Hamas, who are unashamed about what they did on October the 7th, which was a gross terrorist act. So what exactly are we recognising?
Well, I would have thought the state of Palestine includes the West Bank and Gaza, and includes territories that were occupied and are occupied by Israel and should not have been occupied.
You're talking about the 1967,
Go back to 1967.
The land that was seized.
It's unquestionably an issue of complexity, but if you talk, I would have thought, to Palestinians, if they wanted to know, well, will you pass the Occupied Territories Bill or will you recognise the state of Palestine, the latter would be much more forceful.
But I'm trying to get from you, what exactly does that mean? Well, when you've got Hamas, who are they are committed to the destruction of the state of Israel. You've got them on the one hand, then you've got the Palestinian Authority, who are not so committed. So what exactly
there is, a responsibility,
is the Irish government
recognising? There is a responsibility on the state of Palestine to organise its affairs so it has a government, a functioning government. But the functioning of a government isn't really a matter that determines whether or not you recognise a state. Like, the state of Palestine should be recognised. And when it comes to recognition of a government...
No, but the definition of a state is something that has self-government. Whether it's a state in the United States, in the federal system, each state governs its own affairs. So,
well, you could have a situation where you have separate systems of governance in Gaza and the West Bank, and that's still within it, they're regarded federally as a state of Palestine.
So would you then recognise Hamas?
No, I wouldn't recognise it. But I'm not recognising Hamas. Hamas is an organisation. We're talking about recognising the state of Palestine.
But you're talking about a patch of land. You know,
talking about a state. And like, if you look at Ireland, people recognise Ireland. They don't say, oh, we don't want to recognise Fianna Fáil, we don't want to recognise Sinn Féin. You're talking about the state of Ireland. That's the same that should apply in respect of Palestine.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly don't identify with Netanyahu's government in Israel either. Do you know what I mean? And some of the genocidal statements that have come out from members of his government.
So, yeah, I've been pointing out that we in Ireland had this situation where in the Troubles people could condemn the IRA in Britain but still embrace Irish people. Mentioned Terry Wogan, who soldiered on the BBC as its most popular broadcaster at the height of the Troubles. And equally, we could criticise Margaret Thatcher without disliking everything that English people did.
But I think at the moment, the Palestinian people are screaming out for the international community to do something, to act, to recognise what they are going through. And I think that's it. You can work out the details afterwards, but it's a very symbolic measure to take, is to recognise the Palestinian state and to recognise their right to exist. Because what we see unfolding on a day-to-day basis, I mean, I'm listening even that the UN were targeted by the Israeli forces yesterday trying to deliver aid to North Gaza. So we've learned nothing from the World Central Kitchen experience. So I think it's more about the symbolism of standing up and saying to the Israeli state, Palestine has a right to exist. Palestine also has a right to defend itself. And what you are doing is absolutely wrong. And the international community will take every step to try and set out that message very clearly to you, that you must stop.
I still haven't, you know, teased out properly this business of Palestine, one place run by Hamas, and no one has any time for Hamas. And all parties, I think, in the Doyle have condemned what happened on October the 7th. And then on the other hand, the discredited Palestinian Authority. So what are we recognising? The right of a people to have a place? Mm. Yes, absolutely.
And I think the state specifically, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in this, but it does strike me that the fragmentation of Palestine into the two areas, the fact that the governments there and the elected governments there in the Palestinian Authority particularly, I mean, it's not an easy place to govern. A huge amount is due to illegal activity that has happened since, you know, 1940, however you want to define it. So I think now to say, well, you're fragmented and therefore you shouldn't be recognised because of the illegal actions, I wouldn't agree with that necessarily.
It's interesting.
That was the agenda of the fragmentation, you know, all along.
It's where you start the clock in history. I mean, Jewish people feel they have a biblical entitlement to a homeland in the Middle East. The Palestinians will go back to 1947 when many of them were chased out of their homes, the disaster they call the Nakba. All of this, and it, depending on where you start, the clock, Jim, is where people kind of take their...
I know, you can go back in history in respect of every state and, I suppose, the plantation and displacement of people. But, like, where we are politically, and the Irish government stance is the correct one, is that we want to see a two-state solution. Unfortunately, we're not going to have a one-state solution where they live harmonious together in one land. So we need a two-state solution. It's going to be a Jewish state and an Arab state.
Which has been rejected by Netanyahu, by the way. Even though it was agreed originally,
I know,
it's been rejected.
But like, governments change as well. And this is obviously a political problem that ultimately needs a political solution. The violence is completely pointless. We've seen it in our own country. Violence achieves nothing. It's counterproductive. And what we need to see out in the Middle East, in Israel and Palestine, are peace talks to ensure that we have the recognition of two states and stable governments in both states.
Let's move on, and I'll go to you, Lorcan, on this. The new EU migration pact, which has five different components, all of which are designed, they say, to limit the number of people who have no entitlement to come to Europe and to process them quickly, and also to speed up the accession of people who have, if you like, the right to find asylum in the EU.
Yeah, there's a whole host of acronyms that I'm not going to go through, but broad strokes, what people are saying is it's stronger borders, faster processing, and the kind of twin track processing then coming through as well. So that faster processing would mean that applications processed within 12 weeks, the twin track being at the point of arrival in Europe, the EU changes depending on your health status or your nationality or whatever.
But they're going to be taking biometric data from people. They're going to be attempting to ascertain the true identity of people. Now, we know in Ireland, we've had some difficulty with that. When people get on a plane with papers, get off a plane without papers.
Yeah.
And then where are you from? And, you know, clearly people like that have entered illegally without papers. But yet only, I think, one person during the week was prosecuted and jailed for that offence.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, it's 10 years in the making. It is a far from ideal solution. I think, you know, you have to be honest with it and say there are genuine criticisms of this pact, you know, from the left in terms of, are we moving away from the asylum process? Mm-hmm. Should we be fingerprinting, you know, children, the detention centres, etc.? So I think you have to be honest about the genuine criticisms of it and then realise, look, a solution is needed, because the reality right now where there is no solution is inhumane.
I mean, the fingerprinting and whatever biometric data is collected is going into this Eurodac database, so that if people make multiple applications, it will be quickly discerned by the authorities in different countries, oh, they've already applied here or there or yon.
Yeah, and the sharing of data so that there's an alignment across Europe in this, which makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've opted into the Eurodac But we're opting out of a lot of the elements of it where we feel that it's, you know, handing over sovereignty to the EU to make decisions that we could be making here in a very fair and humane way around efficiency. There's nothing stopping the government. I mean, I know I've heard Jim talk on this issue a lot, and he's constantly arguing that the government needs to be more efficient. We weren't waiting for this to happen. That efficiency should be happening. And that efficiency decisions is in the interest of both the person who's seeking asylum, who has a legitimate right to seek asylum, but also to have a fair hearing. And then if they are processed and deemed that they are an asylum applicant, that they can then set up a new life for themselves. And equally, that people aren't languishing, waiting for decisions, setting down roots and then being told, well, actually, no, you're not allowed to stay, and you leave. So that doesn't work for anybody.
We keep on saying justice delayed is justice denied. You know, if you're not going to be allowed in, you should be told fairly quickly.
Exactly.
Look,
you have an appeal process, and then you know the decision is made, and
but isn't that the problem? The appeals
interest.
Process, and Jim knows the courts upside down. An appeals process through the courts can go on for years, by which time those very roots you talk about have been well put down. You've got children who never knew their home country, never knew their home language, and are now little Irish kids, and being told maybe after a couple of years, sorry, it's time to leave.
But the processes have to be made more efficient. Everybody's in agreement with that. What we're saying is you don't need to opt in to do that and to hand over the power. And we don't know what the future makeup of the EU will look like. So we need to be able to be flexible and nimble on this issue.
The process time in this is absolutely everything, because it allows you to have solutions that are not perfect, but that are only 12 weeks long, and therefore we will then have a solution. Yeah. So the process is everything. We could absolutely do it without the EU, but the real politic of this is it's easier to get these things over the line if you can look over and say, well, the EU have a regulation, we must meet it,
and if you don't get access to the information about multiple applications and people having been refused, maybe in Germany, to get asylum, fetch up here. So anyway, Jim.
The British thought they were going to solve this problem by getting out of the EU, and they'd be able to control then inward illegal migration or inward applications for international protection. It failed for them. They have much higher numbers than ever. Going out on our own would be, in my opinion, a crazy idea. The purpose of the EU Migration Pact is to strengthen the system. Like, politically in Europe, there is concern about the numbers who are arriving in. Let's be frank about that. And I don't think we should be afraid to recognise that in Ireland we're finding it extremely difficult at present to accommodate the numbers that are coming in seeking international protection. I look at my own constituency with Mount Street. Like, that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable for the people in the tents, but it's also unacceptable for the people who live nearby and who work nearby. So this pact will expedite the process. It'll hopefully cut down on those issues of judicial review that you referred to, Pat. But I think it's something that we need to expedite quickly. But also there are things we can do at present, because like in the first 3 months of this year, over 5,000 people have applied for international protection. Like, they're entitled to get a quick answer. But that means we're going to get 20,000 this year, which we had 13,500 last year. So it's increasing very significantly. And one of the things I've asked the government to do is to maybe designate other countries as safe countries. If countries are designated as safe countries, you can expedite the process. It reduces the numbers. And I think we need to do that more. We're way behind other European countries.
But Jim wants to hand over that power to the EU to designate which countries are safe. And we're talking about a European Commission that's watching a genocide unfolding in front of their eyes. Ursula von der Leyen's commission, I'm basically saying that they're going to decide which countries are safe to return refugees to. I don't want to give that power to the European Commission. I would much rather that at a domestic level we can decide. We're a neutral country. We have that flexibility to do it in a fair and humane way.
That's incorrect, Lynn, because at present we have the power under Section 72, under the Migration Pact. The EU, yes, it will designate countries as safe countries, but it will not take away the entitlement of EU countries to designate other countries as safe countries as well. So it's a better situation than we have at present.
All right. At the border, of course, is always the problem, because it's a border with the UK, and therefore it's a potential, I suppose, flaw in the whole strategy. Lorcan?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is, actually, I'm one of those people who lives by Mount Street. I live about 60 seconds from it, so I walk past it every day, and the amount of tents there it's absolutely exploded. It's much more significant than it was previously. And I actually think it is worth highlighting. The response of the local community to it has been incredibly, really positive and welcoming, as has the individuals who are in the tents. But if we look at that UK issue, I think any answer I've heard to it, the answer is, thus far, era, we don't really know. It is a flaw. We'll hopefully work it out. I've heard a few interviews on it. Nobody has an answer to that element of it yet.
Finally, something apropos of this programme. There is news emanating from Dublin City Council that a site at Marrowbone Lane is being now actively considered for a playing pitch for the kids.
And I want to commend you for the role you've played in that, isn't it?
No, I'm not looking for kudos.
I'm not giving you kudos. I'm just giving you a commendation. But like, I organised with Catherine Arda a meeting between Thomas Byrne, Minister for Sport, who was on your programme, and Richard Shakespeare, Chief Executive, Dublin City Council. It took place 2 days ago. Very positive meeting. And I'm hopeful that an application for funding will be made by Dublin City Council in respect of the pitch in Marlborough Lane. And there's a commitment there. Having spoken to Richard Shakespeare, he's committed to the pitch. The government want to see it, and we just need to get on with it.
I feel like cheering.
Well, cheer away then, Pat. And if you want, and if you want to come to the Fianna Fáil Ardáis later, you can cheer again.
What I'll tell you is that the lack of amenities, and particularly sporting amenities across the county of Dublin, is actually a real problem and has come up repeatedly from people saying that kids don't have places to play football, and particularly given the weather, the pitches aren't fit, so they need the AstroTurf as well.
Okay, and always the mantra, better to be on a team than in a gang. That's the mantra. All right, we will leave it there. Thank you all very much for joining us. Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Bay South, otherwise known as the greeter at the Fianna Fáil.
Thank you very much. The concierge.
Lorcan Nine, head of training with the Communications Clinic, columnist with the Independent.ie, and Sinn Féin Senator Lynn Boyle. And thank you all.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.